Well, welcome. How are you doing this morning? Great. Well, I'm Stephen Strong. I'm a SQL Server infrastructure consultant. And we have with us today Matthew from Microsoft. He's going to be talking to you about parallel data warehousing at the about halfway through this session. Now, just a quick show of hands. Who's a DBA? Great, most of you guys. Well, how about developers or someone involved in BI? Great. And what about anyone who works in infrastructure or manages servers? Okay, so good content for all of you guys. So I'm assuming the rest of you guys, you know, you didn't put up your hand. You must be here because you've heard this week at TechEd that people that come to this session and evaluate Matthew and myself really well and fill out your evals will each be going home with a new Windows 8 Surface tablet. Oh, well, maybe that was just a rumour. Okay, so I'm going to kick off with a bit about Fast Track. What's the problem we're trying to solve? How we're doing that? And maybe if we have some time, a few lessons learned from customer deployments around the world. And then Matthew is going to come and talk to you about parallel data warehouse appliances, what they're all about, what they look like under the covers, some of the new enhancements coming through, and if we have time, maybe a demo from Beijing. That'd be kind of nice. So, if I have a typical SQL Server OLTP environment and maybe I run into performance problems or I want to enhance performance, we can just, we've got some pretty tried and true methods. As DBAs, you'll kind of know this. We could maybe look at changing our indexing strategy or maybe we could dig into the source code, maybe the stored procedures, have a look at the query execution plans, and then, you know, maybe make sure the execution plans are doing index seeks rather than scans. Or if I have a third-party application, I can't change the code, you know, like Siebel or SAP, then I'd apply a plan guide to maybe choose a more appropriate execution plan and get better performance that way. But, you know, as you guys know, if we're in a data warehousing space, we don't really have a lot of control about what sort of queries people run. So, you know, for instance, maybe they hook up a BI tool to our data warehouse database, and before long, you've got all these people running these crazy queries. You guys must have seen some of these, you know, maybe they're doing complete fact table scans, they're doing some sort of aggregation, and, you know, we really can't control that much, and before long, you know, we run into these performance problems in our data warehouse, and we don't really have a great, you know, solution to kind of deal with those problems. The other thing that we want to address in Fast Track is, when I'm building a business case to roll out my data warehouse, you know, what am I going to present to my stakeholders? How am I going to convince them to part with their money? Because in IT, we always have this problem. And if we do convince them to part with their money for some new infrastructure, how are we going to kind of deliver it quickly? Because we don't want to spend a long time rolling out our infrastructure trying to figure out how to make it perform well, because then, you know, business is going to lose confidence in IT, and then what are we going to do after that? Things don't go well. So now, as an infrastructure consultant, I kind of go around the country dreaming up all sorts of crazy solutions for infrastructure solutions for people. But I thought this morning, you know, we might kind of have a bit of audience participation, and you guys might help us build this fast-track solution for our new database we're going to host our data warehouse on. Now, we're going to In this particular case, we're going to be using like a 30 terabyte data warehouse. And so, you know, we could kind of try to deploy this onto our existing SAN infrastructure, but, you know, as I travel around the country, I find that most people, their SAN's either getting a bit old or maybe it's reaching capacity. So why don't we just kind of go out there and purchase a new SAN? So what should we buy? Maybe you guys could give us some suggestions. Just call them out. You know, should we be buying EMC or IBM or, you know, 3PAR or, you know, what sort of SAN should we be buying? Any ideas? Okay, so, you know, we could kind of choose any of those kind of vendors. And what sort of server should we be putting in front of it? You know, we've got maybe this 30 terabyte database. I mean, you guys are kind of DBAs, you're an infrastructure, you guys should kind of have some idea what sort of server we should put to drive our 30 terabyte data warehouse. What should we buy? How many processors should we put in front of it? You know, four processors? Great. So that's a good start. Is that going to be able to serve our 30 terabyte data warehouse? Sorry? So maybe eight processors or something. How many cores should we be putting in them? 32 cores, okay. Can we buy a server with 32 cores per processor socket? You know, so, you know, maybe, how about we put like 80 cores in this box? You know, let's kind of make sure we can drive this workload. How much RAM should we put in the box? Should we put in like 32 gig or 128 or any suggestions? Yeah, good point. Yep. So, you know, someone's doing a table scan, maybe a 10 terabyte table scan. How much RAM should we put in this box?
As much as you can afford.
All of it, RAM can
afford. So, for RAM, should we put in like half a terabyte or? Okay, so this is just our data warehouse, SQL Server database we're talking about. So, I don't know, maybe we'll put 2 terabytes of RAM in. Do you reckon that would work?
Are we using Halo on this as well?
Okay, so maybe we'll do like an 80-core box, 2 terabytes of RAM, so make it kind of go well. Let's install SQL Server 2012. Let's bulk load our data warehouse with integration services, of course, grant access to our users, and, you know, we're kind of done. So, you know, it's pretty easy, as you see, to be an infrastructure architect. You can kind of just build a solution and you're done, right? How hard can it be? But, you know, of course, my solution's not going to work particularly well here. So, because we have a few kind of problems, you know, if I'm going to go out and buy a large server, a new SAN, you know, I'm going to have a bit of trouble trying to get that past my procurement guys. They're going to whinge you a little bit. But, of course, the issue is that even if I do kind of convince them that they should be buying this stuff, I have a bigger problem. I've still got this problem of my customer or my users going to do these crazy queries. So maybe I've got a 10 terabyte fact table and I've got these people, you know, businesses are going to go out there, they're going to buy a BI tool that you guys have had no involvement in the selection. They're going to hook it up to your data warehouse. No matter what you guys say, they're going to do fact table scans, okay? So maybe I've got a 10 terabyte fact table. They're going to scan this table and, you know, even if we have a couple of terabytes of RAM, it's not really going to, or lots of processing power, it's not going to really help us, right? So what we need to do is we need to be able to pull the data off the disk quickly, right? So if you think about kind of storage performance connecting up to your SAN, so what sort of performance do you think you guys get out of your current SQL Server data runs? So think about how many megabytes per second throughput they would produce. So maybe a bit of a show of hands. How many people think their SQL Server data runs are going to going to be able to sustain more than 100 megabytes per second. Okay, so I'm assuming the rest of you must be running your SQL Server workload on a laptop, right? So, you know, does anyone think their SQL Servers would support more than 500 megabytes per second? Okay, so at least we've got a couple of customers that are running a reasonable SQL Server infrastructure. What about, so does anyone kind of think theirs would sustain more than a gigabyte per second? Okay, so what I'm suggesting is have a look, go and have a talk to these guys after the session, ask them if they've got any jobs going, because that would make your life so much easier. Okay? Now, we don't have, when we connect up our data warehouse to our SAN, it's not really the fault of the SAN. It's not like we've got this slow SAN, right? The issue we have is that we're trying to pull, maybe we're trying to pull 10 terabytes of data off our SAN, right? So even if I roll out a new SAN, before long what's going to happen is people are going to move all their VMs over onto it, maybe they're going to move their file and print environment there, they're also going to want to move their SQL Server OLTP environment or Oracle or DB2 or whatever over onto that new SAN. The moment you know what happens, the moment you get a new SAN, everyone wants to migrate to it because it's got extra flashing lights and somehow it's better. But the issue we have is, you know, to pull this 10 terabytes off the SAN, even though we've got a fair bit of control cache on our SAN, and we've maybe got, we might even have some SSD disks to remove, to get around that hotspot issue, it's not really going to compensate for us doing these huge, these crazy queries, right? We're still going to saturate that, and we're still back into the into kind of fairly low performance. Not really the fault of the SAN, right? Just the kind of workload that we're applying to it. Yeah, and we're in this mixed workload environment. So, you know, we need to kind of do something about that. So where does FastTrack fit into this? Well, if you guys are building or deploying a data warehouse that kind of is somewhere between and going to grow into somewhere between 10 terabytes and 100 terabytes, that's kind of where FastTrack reference architectures fit, right? So, and as you kind of increase the query complexity or maybe have very high concurrency in your data warehouse, that's where you want to kind of ramp up and step maybe into parallel data warehouse appliances. And Matthew's going to talk to you a bit about that in a moment. So FastTrack's not actually a product. So you can't just go out there, ring up Microsoft and say, deliver me FastTrack. It doesn't kind of work like that. So FastTrack's really a bunch of components that's kind of like infrastructure, like processes and network and storage, etc. But it's also like specific database configuration to get great performance. And there's some exact guidelines of how to build this stuff and configure it so that you kind of solve these problems of people doing these crazy queries. But I really like FastTrack because it's still just Windows and SQL Server, right? So you guys already know how to use and manage it. But it's kind of more than that. It's built by our hardware partners. It's put together. Microsoft and hardware partners work together to produce a reference architecture that solves exactly that problem. People are doing these crazy queries and we're trying to pull the data off the disks as quickly as possible, right? We're trying to solve that problem. So how does this stuff work? Oops. So under the covers, we kind of know that data warehouse workload is predominantly SQL reads, right? So if we have sequential reads, there's a few things that we kind of know about then that our commodity hardware, so just kind of think about the usual kind of infrastructure you buy, is actually quite good at doing sequential reads. Now, if you monitor SQL Server in your environment, maybe at kind of at a higher level, what you're trying to monitor for is things like, you know, high CPU, high network utilization, high storage utilization, high RAM utilization. And what you normally do is say, hey, if any of these things occur, that's really bad, okay? And as DBAs operations people, you're going out there and saying, if I see any of these things being true, I'm going to go and investigate that and figure out what's going wrong. But Microsoft and the hardware partners a few years ago kind of thought, well, maybe from a business point of view, that's actually quite good. You know, so put my business case up, business really want to know that you're going to fully utilise your infrastructure, right? So they actually want to have high CPU, high network utilisation, fully utilise the RAM that you've purchased in your server, and how high disk I/O. But what would that look like if all of those things were true at exactly the same time? So apart from causing a few headaches for your operational team, you know, so Fast Track's all about doing this balanced architecture of making all those things perform at 100% with no bottlenecks all the time, okay? And because you guys can choose which hardware vendor you go to, whether that be HP or Dell or IBM, Cisco, EMC, whatever, you know, you can get a reference architecture from any of your existing hardware vendors, okay? So you're not kind of limited to, hey, you know, you need to go and buy from this particular vendor. Okay, so when you go out and have a look at a reference architecture, you'll realise it has a whole bunch of information in it. It has a bill of materials, you know exactly what to buy, you know exactly how to configure it. There's usually a whole bunch of scripts that come with it, help you to build your infrastructure out, how to lay out the disks, how to do the network configuration, etc. So if I'm going to solve my crazy query problem, what I want to do is I want to pull the data back from my storage as quickly as possible, right? So what I might do is I might create a bunch of small LUNs, maybe. I might put all my data warehouse data files, my database data files, and I'll spread those over all of those small LUNs so the SQL Server can pull all that data back in parallel. And that'll become a little bit more obvious in a minute how that works. So here we have a 30 terabyte reference architecture for data warehousing, SQL Server 2012, of course. This one just happens to be HP, but you know we could have chosen Dell or IBM, Cisco, EMC, whatever. And you'll see it has this kind of small two-processor DL380G8, okay? Small just two sockets, and it has these four disk shelves, okay, or storage enclosures. Now, these storage enclosures are actually kind of like mini SANs. And if you have a SAN background or you're a SAN administrator, you're like going, what is he talking about? This is crazy. This is an enterprise. Why, in an enterprise environment, why would I buy four tiny little one-shelf SANs? So they each have storage processors in them, and in this case, they're fibre channel connected, 8-gig fibre channel. But, you know, in other reference architectures, we use 10-gig iSCSI. So you're kind of thinking, this is just crazy. It's a small server and four disk shelves. Okay? So how's this work? How are we going to make this perform with our 30 terabyte data warehouse? So if you look on your your right-hand side here of the screen, you'll see we've got our four storage enclosures. Okay, so in this particular case, this HP design, they're using these small RAID 10 disk sets, okay, on each storage enclosure. You can see the one at the top there has four RAID 10. Now, other reference architectures use RAID 5, okay, but this particular one uses RAID 10 because HP have worked out that you can actually read from both, if you're doing sequential read, you can actually read from both sides of a mirror set. So remember, it's all about increasing our price performance ratio. Okay, we want to lower the cost of you guys being able to deploy large data warehouses, but on minimal amount of kit. So HP have kind of decided in this case that if we use RAID 10, we can actually pull the data back quickly, but at low cost. Okay, so in this case, we've got these RAID 10 disk sets. Now, for my data warehouse. If you think about the database files, I'm going to place one database file on each of these small RAID 10 disk sets. Okay? So, and the reason I'm doing that is because when I have my user come in and run this crazy fact table scan, maybe joining to some dimensions, etc., doing some aggregation, I want to be able to have SQL Server pull the data in parallel from each of these disks. Okay, so in our case here, each of these RAID 10 disk sets will do about 400 megabytes per second, which is kind of not so great. But, you know, when I go around to customers, basically what I see is most SAN-connected SQL servers produce somewhere between 400 and 800 megabytes per second throughput. I'm not talking about peak use, I'm talking about sustainable throughput. So what would you sustain all day, every day? Okay, so now if I'm doing this in parallel, you'll see I can pull back this data from an enclosure at 1.6 gigabytes per second. Now, in this case, we're adding four enclosures, so SQL servers can pull the data off the disks at 6.4 gigabytes per second. So that's gigabytes, not gigabits. And to put this into perspective, if I have an SSD card in my server as maybe a storage accelerator card, that's the kind of performance I'd get from SSD. So remember, these are just, you know, commodity. This is just commodity off-the-shelf hardware. So we're doing kind of SSD performance, but at a pretty low price. Okay, so now of course we're connecting this in this case to our fiber channel switch. As I say, in other reference architectures, could be iSCSI, and each of the switch ports there can sustain 1.6 gigabytes per second. And then we have our four HBAs on our server, and these are dual port 8 gigabit, and they're on the new PCIe 3 bus. So the four of them together can sustain 6.4 gigabytes per second. So you might be thinking, look, you're just repeating yourself. So why is this stuff all doing the same thing? So you might be... Sorry? Yeah, so you don't have any bottlenecks. So you can see everything's kind of... this is what we call a balanced architecture in FastTrack. Now we have our small two processor server, 8 cores per processor in this case, and that can sustain 5.8 gigabytes per second. Not quite kind of 6.4, but pretty close, right?
What's the total storage capacity?
So this one here is just over 20 terabytes, but because we're using compression, page level compression, and column store compression, this is how we get our 30 terabytes. So, you know, now if I have like last year's FastTrack 3, and I move to fast and I just apply SQL Server 2012 with column store indexes, suddenly I'm like doubling performance. So the real enhancement here in FastRate 4 is SQL Server 2012. And, of course, you know, we have other things, like we now support solid-state drives, and, you know, we have have things like failover clustering, et cetera, coming in, so we can have a highly available solution. So, you know, and, of course, with FastTrack, because it's just SQL Server, we can kind of integrate it into our existing BI solution fairly quickly and easily. Now, you know, if I'm rolling this out to a customer, or if you guys are rolling it out more likely, you might want to verify that this is kind of going to do and perform, and don't just take my word for it, right? Or the hardware vendor's word for it. You know, they're going to sell you all sorts of crazy stuff. But, you know, if you just use something like SQLio, you can deploy that and pull all the data off the disks in parallel after it's been configured and verify that these numbers are making sense. You know, you really could, you know, I've been at customer sites and we did get this kind of performance. Like in 5 minutes, spin up SQLio, look, bang, you can do it. And it's repeatable. So if I had like maybe a 95 terabyte solution, I could be getting like 20 gigabytes per second. You know, just bang, straight off. You know, you don't have to worry about it's no kind of special smoke and mirrors, etc. Okay? If I have a dev environment, one of the things I might want to do is I might want to try to emulate my FastTrack environment. So you might not have the funds to build and deploy FastTrack in dev, but because most reference architectures use mount points for all these LUNs, I can just build the same folder structure in my dev environment. Okay? Now, to increase concurrency, what we can do is we can just use resource governors to restrict the amount of RAM that we allocate to each query. Okay, so we don't want to use something like maxdop and maybe reduce the amount of processes, because we still want to have the ability to pull the data off all of the disks in parallel, use all of our cores all at the same time to achieve this kind of performance, okay? So we're going to kind of ramp it up a little bit now, and we're going to step up a bit into Parallel Data Warehouse.
Thank you, Stephen. So FastTrack as a whole, it's a really good solution, but it has limitations. As soon as you get to a certain size, the cost starts to increase high. The actual administration costs as well become expensive. And so the concepts around Parallel Data Warehouse really is to try and simplify all of that while keeping the cost down to a minimum. So Parallel Data Warehouse will scale from 10 terabytes all the way up to petabytes. So the current solution goes up to 654 terabytes with a 4 rack, but petabytes are coming down the road in the next release. It's currently based entirely on SQL Server 2008. It is compliant with T-SQL. However, that is a subset of T-SQL. There are certain commands that we cannot execute at the moment on a MPP system, but we're trying to overcome them. We offer a choice of hardware, both HP and Dell. One of the key things that we're always asked is, can you compare this with just basic SQL Server to what Parallel Data Warehouse offers? So FastTrack, or SQL Server as a whole, is a single server SMP box. Parallel Data Warehouse follows a shared nothing architecture, and it runs on a massively parallel processing system. So it's basically smaller commodity compute nodes executing in parallel. So what we saw in FastTrack, where we had an entire balanced architecture on one single system, what you're actually getting within Parallel Data Warehouse is a balanced architecture across multiple nodes. By actually doing this, we can actually extend the scalability. So if you actually want to increase disk, we increase disk and compute nodes at the same time, so you're actually increasing CPU, memory, all in equal proportion. And also, you can it contains failover options, etc., so we can actually guarantee the high availability. And in fact, we'll have demonstrated that today with the Beijing appliance, because it actually did fail overnight. So Parallel Data Warehouse, really, it's tuned just for data warehousing at the moment. So let's just go quickly through the actual architecture. I have a lot of slides to cover in half an hour, and I actually would like to show you a demonstration as well. So on the left-hand side, so the current version of the PDW hardware comes in two racks. One is the control rack on the left, and the other is the data rack. So the control rack, once you've purchased that once, as you want to increase the actual size, storage, etc., you never have to swap that out. You just increase the number of data racks. The data racks can go from a half a rack all the way up to four racks. So a half a rack is four compute nodes, 4+1 for failover, and a full rack is actually 10+1, so it's not actually quite half, but it's done that way for cost. On the control rack, I'm going to go through each one of these one by one just to give you an idea of what they actually do. So control node, this is the access point. So any BI tool, SQL tool, etc., even your administration console runs on the control node. This is clustered, automatic failover. It's actually active-passive. The idea of the control node is this is actually where we're actually doing the actual, what we call the PDW secret source, but it's actually optimizing your SQL into a parallel execution plan. So when you think about what does that actually really mean, what it's actually doing is it's taking your T-SQL, it's putting it through a shell database that actually runs on the control node, so an actual SQL Server 2008 shell database. It uses the cost-based optimizer built into that to actually then come back with a series of plans. Based on those plans, we then actually inject in the actual parallel statement. So we split it out on how it actually can then execute, how it needs to shuffle data between nodes, et cetera, and I'll explain a little bit more about that later. The other thing we support at the moment with the latest release, the standard SQL native drivers. In fact, with the release as of 2 weeks ago, we now support SQL native 11 as well drivers. The SQL link wire protocol, that's legacy, so that comes from the history of PDW, so that was the original set of drivers from the Datalegro product that we've purchased. And obviously full set ADO.NET, JDBC, so what's in .NET today will execute against PDW with no problems. The other thing about the control node is when we come to statistics, we actually have, so if we've got 10 compute nodes, we've got statistics on each of those compute nodes for that set of data that's stored on that compute node. For the control node to make the best possible parallel plan, it actually has to pull that set of statistics up to the control node and then store it locally. So yes, there's no persistent user data, but we do store the metadata and the set of statistics on the control node so you can get the best performance in terms of the actually putting together the execution plan. Management node. Again, it's a clustered box. On here, we actually host the Windows domain controller. So we have a Active Directory on here. We actually deploy all patches through here. We contain a full image of every single compute node. So if we actually want to do updates, we place it onto the management node, and then we push the updates out to all of the actual compute nodes and the control rack system as well. Landing zone. We have a dedicated system here that's connected to the data rack via InfiniBand. So that was the other thing. Between the control rack and the compute nodes, we have a dedicated InfiniBand network to actually ensure. So at present, it's a 20 gigabyte per second network, and we want to maximize the actual performance through. The landing zone can contain SSIS, if you want to do data loads via that, or we actually contain our own bulk data loader, which I'll be demonstrating later on, called DW Loader. We don't currently support BCP. However, DW Loader will outperform BCP today, certainly for PDW workload. So DW Loader is, again, it's heritage from the Datalegro product. At present, we only support the one landing zone within the actual control rack, but again, that's changing in the future. So the idea of the landing zone, as I said there, is that if you want to copy files, you copy files via SMB across to the landing zone. You then use either DWloader, SSIS, etc., to push the data as fast as possible across all compute nodes. So what DWloader does is, say, for instance, if we're reading a 50 million row file, it actually round robins all 50 million records as fast as possible via the data movement service within PDW to all compute nodes. The compute nodes then actually take the what we've actually specified for a single table, what the hash distribution key is, and then shuffles the data across to where it should actually be placed on the actual compute nodes. And that, as I say, is done as extremely fast. We, on a one single rack, we can achieve up to 2.5 terabytes per hour. It is completely hidden. So, for instance, as I was saying about Fast Track, so there's a lot of administration actually defining all of the actual page layouts of the table file groups and so on. Within PDW, you don't have to do any of that. So you just say create table, you define what your distribution is, and it goes ahead and creates all the underlying tables on all the compute nodes. And there's a slide to actually show that later on. So the backup node. Basically, at the moment, you can run a single SQL statement to actually do a full or differential backup of the entire system across to the backup node. Now, this is actually using standard SQL Server backup. So we actually see really good compression of the data. The actual performance is impressive as well, and because, again, it's utilizing the InfiniBand network. Once it's on the actual backup node, it's then open up to whatever backup service your company has to offer. Again, this is actually it's an optional item in terms of the configuration, so really it depends on what size data warehouse you want and what your backup strategy is going to be. PDW, the actual compute nodes themselves. So each compute node, I'll give you a little bit on the hardware. The compute nodes as of AE3, they're 12 core boxes with 96 gigabytes of RAM. As of AU 3.5, so AU is an appliance update, as of AU 3.5 2 weeks ago, that has been increased to 16 cores and 128 gigabytes of RAM per compute node. So each compute node, it has a single SQL Server 2008 instance, and then, in fact, I'll show you that in a second, of Enterprise Edition, create a table and define it, we actually ensure that every single one of those tables is properly laid out in terms of a balanced approach. And in fact, I'll show you that in a few slides further. So the actual compute node itself has local tempdb storage, and attached to that we also have a SAN storage connected via fiber. That has 24 disks, and it's actually each individual distribution is laid out in RAID 1 pairs. And I'll show you that in more detail in a minute. So when you actually define a table, you actually have to specify either whether it's distributed or replicated. So the reason why we want to do that is if you think about, say, a typical star schema data mart, the fact table itself, you can distribute that across all compute nodes. So essentially, one full rack is 80 distributions. So you're splitting that data into 80 chunks and then placing it in across the actual all the compute nodes in a balanced approach. Obviously, you have to specify what that key is. So if you've got a good key to actually distribute that data, we'll then hash it accordingly. Replicating, what that will do is it'll take an exact copy of the table and take one copy to each compute node. So even though a compute node contains 8 distributions, it still only has one replicated copy. The reason for that is if you then want to join your fact table to, say, dimensions, which you might want, which being small, you'd replicate, what it does is when you actually run the query, it fires off to each individual compute node 8 queries that actually joins together the fact table slice of data to the actual individual replicated table. And then, because that's actually across all compute nodes, that's extremely fast because it's only dealing with a small chunk of data. Once that's complete, it then pushes the data back up to the control node for consolidation. So if it's got a final sort, for instance, the final sort is done on compute node and on control node. So it'll pre-sort and then final sort. So the storage nodes. Mentioned quite a bit of this already. So the 8 gigabyte fiber across, RAID 1 layout. We have at the moment 8 distributions, so we actually we set it up so that we have one RAID 1 pair for each of the disks. So we actually use 16 disks, you'll see on here, for all the distributions on a compute node, and then with the remaining disks are used for log, and we have a couple of hot spares. In terms of the layout, so we were talking about distributed data and replicated data. So we have here each individual distribution is on its own LUN. Each one of these is both, it's because we actually want to ensure a balanced approach, we actually tie in each one of those file groups to a single core or two cores, depending on the actual configuration, via soft NUMA. And so that's all pre-configured for you, so we can guarantee that memory, CPU, and I/O performance for each individual distribution. The replicated table goes across all LUNs, so we're guaranteeing that the scan rate. And so, in terms of the replication, we actually recommend that 2 gigabyte is a good size for as a maximum currently, but that's 2 gigabyte compressed. So we all tables are by default page compressed. So on average, 2 gigabyte can be a 5 gigabyte actual source data. Okay, so how does a query typically execute within PDW? So we submit a query via the client into the control node. That query is then executed on all compute nodes. So the actual control node breaks down the actual SQL, fires off all of the queries on each of the compute nodes, and then passes back the results to the control rack. So now I just want to go through a couple of customer successes. So we can't name who these are at the moment, but we're hoping that this particular one will become a case study in the near future. So they are in production today. So when they actually was looking at using PDW, so they were investigating whether or not they had an existing 80 terabyte warehouse all on a SQL SMP farm. What they wanted to do, so they had a set of requirements. They wanted to guarantee that as the data increases, they could actually maintain the performance, whether that meant actually purchasing new hardware. They wanted that linear scalability and to ensure that what the reports and the queries they execute today stay the same length of time. They also wanted to support hourly loads of 300 gigabyte per day, which is nothing, really. So we do, on a single rack, 2.5 terabytes per hour. So 300 gigabytes is nothing. They wanted full BI integration with SSRS, SSAS, and PowerPivot. Again, Microsoft Stack, fully supported. So the feedback that we got, based on their current system compared to the PDW system, 142 times performance increase. And that was literally taking what their design, making the right decisions on whether what the data was going to be distributed on, whether or not tables should be replicated. And those are pretty much the only decisions they had to make. Load it into PDW. And because we support the T-SQL that they were currently executing in SSRS and so on, there was no issues in the actual migration process. Another example. Now, this particular customer, they have now, we've now released a case study with them. So this is actually Hy-Vee in the US. One of their requirements was they had an existing 11 terabyte system. It was 2 years' worth of data. It's fairly small in comparison to what we're seeing at the moment. What they wanted to do, based on regulatory requirements, they needed to move that to 7 years' worth of data. They tried to achieve this on their existing hardware. They couldn't. So they then went out to the market and started to look at PDW. So that was their biggest requirement, that and supporting their current stack with limited migration requirements. So they're in production. There is a case study on the Microsoft website about this. They, based on the expanded data set, they have achieved 30 times the performance of their existing system. And that's comparing to their existing system running 2 years' worth of data, not seven. No. No. So one of the advantages of PDW is if you've got you can actually have a hub and spoke system. So you can actually attach a SQL Server SMP system. So if there's something PDW doesn't support today, we can attach an SQL Server SMP system directly to the InfiniBand. We can then do a remote table copy across from PDW through to the SMP system, and that transfer is done as a bulk transfer. And we, depending on the actual hardware of that SMP system, if it's a fast track system, then we can actually max out the fast track system in actually pushing the data through. So yeah, the other side of it is as well on SSAS, we actually do allow for an SSAS system to be connected directly to the control node to pull the data through. So, assuming everything is good with the demo gods. So I'm actually connecting to an appliance in Beijing. Okay, I'm just showing here that overnight the actual one of the compute nodes failed over. So compute node 1 failed over, and it automatically fails over to compute node 91. So we can run it as the demonstration without any issues. I just wanted to point that out in case you wondered what the failover event was. So this is the admin console for PDW. We can immediately from here, so if you actually access this via any web browser to the control node, we can immediately identify the sessions, the executing queries, any load history, backup history, etc. from here. We can also look at the performance of the system. So at the moment we have the processor CPU percentage for each of the individual nodes within the actual rack itself, plus the read and write times, and so we can actually see the activity on it's roughly around a 3-second interval. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to leave that up. Currently with AU3, we don't support the current SQL Server Management Studio. We actually provide the Nexus query client. However, SQL Server Management Studio, the support for that is coming in the future, and I know that the Visual Studio, the data tools will be supported first before Management Studio. But this is pretty familiar in terms of how you execute queries, what it looks like. It's very, very similar. So I'm just going to make sure that this table is empty. So I'm just going to quickly do a truncation and a count. Then I'm just going to switch over to the actual landing zone itself, and that's locked. Yes, so this is one of the nodes within the control rack, where we're actually we can push any data from your source systems and then load that within to the actual compute nodes. So it's a staging platform, but it's actually part of the appliance itself, so it comes with it. So just from here, I just wanted to show you this. So we're just going to load nearly 32 gigabyte file. It contains 50 million rows. So it is just derived data, so it's just generated. Set of data, there's roughly, memory serves me right, it was 96 columns of data, all pipe delimited. What's on the left there, it's just a PowerShell script that actually executes the DW loader. So that's just for simplicity more than anything on my part. So I'm just going to execute that now, and we'll be able to see DW loader running. So all this does is it wraps one single command, which is the DW loader command, passes through all the appropriate parameters. If I move back to the performance monitor, we can immediately see all of the compute nodes are now fully active, including the failed over one. So compute node 1 is not active. The failed over one has taken over the workload for that. And we can also see that the landing zone LZ01 is fully active in terms of reading. So at this point, any questions?
If what node with a lot of distinct cards, what
Okay, so the question was, what's the performance improvement for distinct counts? So again, it depends on whether that's a distributed table or a replicated table. If it's distributed, it'll actually do the distinct count on each of the individual distributions across all compute nodes, and then roll that distinct back up to the compute node. So again, for instance, if it was a distinct count on a low cardinality value, then the performance is really good. As the number of unique values increases, the performance tails off. So it's very, very similar in that sense to SQL Server. But one of the good things is that in the future releases, we will be supporting things like column store as well to be able to optimize that. So that's actually finished now. We can quickly move across to the load screen. So yeah, so basically the answer to that is we do improve the performance of a typical distinct count than what, say, FastTrack would execute today, purely because we actually execute it across the entire parallel appliance. We can see the top line there. So that execution there came through in 47.990 seconds. There's always a little bit of a difference in terms of startup time of the actual client itself. But if we put that into the warehouse, into the spreadsheet, so 9.0. So that was roughly what we achieved in that demonstration, 2.3 terabytes per hour. Now, the bigger the file, the better the performance, generally. That's what we see. In terms of the InfiniBand on this release, we're only actually utilizing about 34% of the actual InfiniBand, so we actually have a lot of headroom in which to improve the product. So I'm going to switch back. So I'm just going to go now through some of the updates. So AU3, the appliance update 3, that came out roughly 4 to 5 months ago. That was one of our biggest updates in terms of the actual product itself since the first V1 release. The reason being is we did a lot of work to improve performance, and I will go through how all that was actually achieved. Also, as part of the appliance update, we actually do a refresh of the hardware. So we achieve, on average, it's between 5 to 10 times faster performance than the previous release, the AU2. That is driven by the fact that we moved to cost-based optimizer. So we now make use of the cost-based optimizer built into SQL Server to actually better produce the plan. We also did a lot of optimizations in terms of tweaking the actual parallel processing part of it. Data movement. So I mentioned before, each of the individual compute nodes plus the control node and the landing zone contains the data movement service, and it's that actually does the movement of data or manages that movement of data across the entire appliance. That was completely rewritten as part of AU3 to make use of the optimized native ODBC database types that we saw up to 6 times performance improvement. So replicating a table, for instance, actually was showing 6 times performance improvement. We also, as part of this, we are supporting more users with higher concurrency. So we actually tuned the way PDW makes use of resource governor under the covers. But again, you don't have to worry about all of that. It's all done for you. And we also improved the way that using the same things we can manage mixed workloads. So you can have 10 DW loader jobs running while the queries are running. Yeah, we also improved the manageability of it. So we actually now have integration with System Center. So we provided a SCOM pack. And we also improved the actual admin console as well as part of AU3. And as I said before, one of the biggest changes was we actually moved to supporting the TDS protocol, and we tried to improve a lot more of the TSQL SQL to make it more in par with SQL Server today. And so that's actually, as each appliance update goes through, we actually work our way to actually having a 100% parity with SQL Server. But obviously that as we do that, we have to make sure that we tune each of the individual functions to be parallel, to actually execute in parallel across the compute nodes as the best possible performance. And so that's the reason why we actually only support a subset today. We also have driven down the actual cost of the PDW system itself. And one of the reasons being is we introduce Dell as an alternative to HP. And in a lot of customers today, by doing that, we've got a dramatic improvement in the cost reduction of the actual purchase itself. We also, as an entry point, we introduce a half rack, or four compute nodes. And as part of the support of the TDS protocol and the SQL Server native client drivers, we try to achieve better parity in terms of supporting more of the BI tools. So we added SAS Hadoop connectors, Informatica connectors. So when we say SAP Business Objects, that's actually Business Objects Integrator. So that's actually part of a connector just for that. International data support. Until AU3, we didn't actually support collation. We now support collation. So full Unicode support as well as non-Unicode with collations. So a couple of key takeaways there. So the fast track reference architecture provides cost-effective approach, but it does have its limitations because it requires a lot of administration. And we try to overcome a lot of that with PDW by providing a pre-configured appliance and actually making PDW do the work for you as both an administrator and a developer. So, Stephen, do you want to come back up? Any questions, either of I? So you actually specify the distribution key as within your create table statement. And so, for instance, a single column within there, and it actually hashes that key across all of the distributions within your compute node.
Would you tune that when you set it up?
You would specify that, yes.
So you can probably change it.
You can change it to get the best distribution, and that's one of the things you need to look out for is you don't want skewed data. I can't provide any release dates, but I can say it's definitely in the pipeline. Well, until AU 3.5, it didn't support truncate table. Now it does. There were simple things to do, but it was just prioritized. Yes, well, those kind of things we can discuss afterwards. Within the PDW appliance itself today, we don't use any virtualization. That's not saying that we wouldn't in the future.
Yeah, so we recently did a customer implementation that had kind of that scenario. So generally, you'd just build another SQL Server for ETL and plug that into your fast track environment. Okay, so just think about it as a separate SQL Server that pushes the data into fast track. So we'll also be hanging around the speaker lounge downstairs. So feel free to kind of catch up with us and ask us any kind of detailed questions.
And we're happy to. Don't forget to provide feedback. Thank you.
Thank you.